Om Shanti. So it is my privilege to welcome you, brother and sisters, and especially for Baba's sweet angel, Sister Gopi. And this is our fortune to have her this morning to go deeper into Baba's homework this year. And Gopi Ben came to Gyan since her childhood, and very fortunate she gets sustenance from many seniors, including the daddies. And also for myself, since the first time I met her, he gave me such a big impact to my spiritual life. Her honesty, her courageous, her courage and her powerful stage really helped me to be stable in this path. So without further ado, let us hear her wisdom, her experiences regarding the topic, which is becoming avyakt, in the thinking. Okay, Om Shanti.
It's funny how it gets introduced as her wisdom when it's actually Baba's wisdom. No? I'm not sure why, but I think I'd like to start this topic off with a story. And this story comes to mind a lot. And at first glance, it doesn't appear connected at all to this topic, but I'll tell you the story anyway. It was about 3 or 4 years ago, maybe more, and it was the month of perhaps January. And I had a 3.5 week tour in Sri Lanka. And the war there had just finished, and somehow through some connections we had been given some clearance from the Ministry of Defense to travel into the war zones. And I was going to travel from Colombo to somewhere in the north, I think Jaffna, by an army plane. You know, one of those big tank-like looking planes that don't have many windows. And so we boarded this plane, and, you know, there was just maybe a total of 12 seats in two configurations. And so myself and another sister were in the front, 2 seats on this side. And there was another kind of important looking person in the other seats with his aides. It was only much later that I found out that was the Minister for Defense. And throughout the whole journey of about 45 minutes, he would be often looking over and saying, hello. I would be, yes, hello. And of course, they were very busy with all their paperwork, but I didn't know who they were. And so I had no idea that I was traveling. I had been given special permission to travel in the aircraft with the Minister of Defense and all his staff. And I was the only civilian with a friend, sister of mine. So very innocently, you know, well, I'm getting a ride, great. And then we arrive in the city and the landing strip is just dust. It's a dust strip and this big army tank aeroplane lands. And as it lands, you know, we're coming out and I'm used to being picked up. Or I was thinking, oh, I wonder how we're going to get to our place. And so we're coming off the aircraft and our luggage is being brought out. And then suddenly there's a whole media crew around the people on the plane, these people who had come off the plane. And I was right behind the Minister of Defense and I didn't know that was the minister. And so the media is filming us and we're all walking in a group towards some black vehicles. And I'm thinking, great, well, maybe one of our transport is there. And the sister who had traveled with me, after a few moments, I noticed she wasn't with us in the group. So I turned around, and she was standing by the plane, waving at me, saying, "That's not our transport. That's our transport." And when I looked across, there was this rickety old 10-seater bus. You know, like rusty, green and pink-coloured bus. And I looked and I thought, oh, okay. I went back, changed direction, and we got onto the bus. And this bus went through these red, dusty lanes out into the things. And we were having a little laugh. Because as I sat on the bus, I kind of thought to myself, gosh, here you are and you assume so many rights, subtle rights, you know, that something's going to be taken care of for you, something's going to be done for you. Maybe these are remnants of a previous birth of having had a lot of things, that you bring that samskara into this birth of naturally having a right. Well, there's your transport. But actually that transport belongs to the Minister of Defense, not you. And so it was a hilarious moment for me, because I thought to myself, this is such a habit of the human being, is to work on the basis of rights. We live with what we feel we have a right over. Right? So it could be over people. It could be over things. It could be over particular ways that we like to live and be. We live in a right because that's the way we have developed it. And I thought, this is so inbuilt into the human psyche to live with rights. And the need to feel like I have a right over something. Now, in the spiritual context, I'm going to rewind the journey back to your first moment with Baba. So do you remember the first moments of being born to Baba? Remember? What did they feel like? Sorry? Everything? He belongs to me. Others? What did those moments of birth feel like? Delightful? Lightful? Drama? Okay. Greatness? Happiness? Excitement? And quiet joy? Right? The moment you're born, all of these energies are yours. They're just yours. They're your right. You know, in Sangam Yoga, it's your right to be happy. It's your right to be loving. It's your right to godly happiness. And I was thinking about this a lot because I suppose we lose a sense of being subtle in our thinking when we lose awareness of our spiritual rights. And we substitute spiritual rights for material rights. You know, it could be service, outcomes and service, relationships. And that's where the happiness fluctuates. But the moment I stay aware of the energy I received from Baba, and I felt as a child with Baba, that is my eternal godly happiness is my right. And I think a soul that has accepted that very deeply will not be tempted or attracted in their thoughts to things, other things. Yeah? You'll see other things for what they are, which is, in the world we live in, pretty tasteless. You know, there's not much sweetness in things anymore. And I feel that when we explore this subject of becoming avyakt, for me it seemed like a bit of a paradox that we would talk about becoming avyakt in our thinking. Because to become avyakt is a deep feeling. And it's the feeling of godly love. It's the feeling of the ocean of peace is my Father. It's the feeling of my own supreme purity. It's the feeling of joy. The avyakt experience is a qualitative experience. It's a quality state of feeling. And so when someone is in their avyakt stage, they will feel their way through things. The thinking is a secondary element. So the first honor that's given is emerging, and the feeling of peace, emerging godly love, emerging the sense of feeling combined with Baba, and then observing. And the thought only is generated as required. You know, I've been watching Daddy Janki a lot lately, and Daddy's somebody who's very true in herself. And many times people will ask Daddy a question, and Daddy will just sit there. And if an answer comes, it comes. If it doesn't come, she doesn't say anything. You see what I mean? There's no extra thoughts there. Oh, they've asked me a question and I have to answer. There's no obligation, no feeling of obligation or subservience in the mind at all. Yeah? The avyakt stage is a stage that is free from attraction and subservience. And that's why you can almost be quite childlike in this stage. You know, that little child that hasn't yet gotten used to its body and is just a soul-conscious little ball of energy. It's delightful, isn't it? So, yeah, it doesn't matter if whatever's going around, whether it's raining or whatever, it's exuberant with its energy. And so I suppose becoming avyakt, and it's something that I've been experimenting with, is beginning from this place of feeling, pure feeling, with everything. And then if the thought comes, it comes. If it doesn't come, that's okay too. So thinking is completely opposite to practicing the avyakt stage. Does that make sense? Now, there is a context for the avyakt stage. Remember, the avyakt muralis were spoken after 33 years of the sakar experience. And the sakar experience and the sakar muralis are muralis that cover not only the basics of gyan, the history and geography and the facts and figures, but also very much the practice of virtues in life. Through the sakar muralis, Baba told us, speak sweetly, speak softly, speak slowly. Don't look at anyone's defects. Very practical advice to adopt virtues in our interactions and reform our character. Right? And so, I remember a murli many years ago when Baba had said, when new ones come, don't get them to practice the avyakt stage too quickly. Because it's, you know, he didn't say this, but I understood from that murli that what then that happens is if they haven't had the sakar experience of using their body, of fusing with Baba, using their time, thoughts, body, money, wealth in Baba's service, then the avyakt stage becomes an escape from the drama, a disassociation from life. If I'm unhappy with something, then I'm going to practice the avyakt stage. Right? And then it's like, I'm a soul, I'm a peaceful soul, I'm a pure soul, I'm a soul, I'm a peaceful. You keep putting this injection. It's like keeping to inject yourself, but it's like getting into a lift and pressing button one, but you're not going very far. Because you're having to use so many thoughts to create the stage that you don't even lift off the ground. Does that make sense? So, it's very important that the sakar experience in our lives is looked at. I remember in the early days, you know, We've done so much karma yoga, I mean, as a child, being in Baba's homes and looking after Baba's homes, and the first induction you get is cleaning and cooking and preparing the home, etc., etc. And I suppose when you have given your bones to Baba like that, you've cleaned Baba's home, looked after Baba's children, you've cooked for Baba, you've shared knowledge, you've practically engaged in things. After a period of time, just because you've had physical fusion at so many levels, you start to feel a sense of ownership in your relationship with Baba. Baba is mine. He's nobody else's, he's mine. I don't think you can become avyakt without this feeling, he's mine. And once it gets into your bones, it's like it's belonging isn't an issue anymore. You're just this, yeah, he's mine, everyone else is mine. There's a sense of closeness that is felt all the time. And I suppose over the years, as you know, on the field of service and watching so many souls come to Baba's home. Each soul, of course, chooses how they want to relate to Baba. And of course, everyone's number wise, eh? And so, you know, you'll get souls that want preferences. Well, I want to do this service, but I don't want to do this service. I want to do that, but I don't want to do it like that. Or I'm afraid to, if I have free time, I'm afraid to ask the teacher in case they tell me to do something I don't want to do. Right? So there's this kind of, I love you, but I still want to keep a distance from you. And what happens is, when you can't surrender, like a little child would just surrender, then something gets missed. Something gets missed from your childhood. Because without that kind of natural surrender, you can't renounce in later on. Renunciation becomes difficult. You know, when you've surrendered and you've just gone with the flow of what Baba is inviting you into, then later on, when things come up inside or outside, letting go is easy. And that's what's required, you know, becoming avyakt mentally. It's a deep shedding process, your ability to shed opinions. You know, renunciation has many levels. When you first came to Baba, it was very gross. You moved house, you moved job, you moved center, you made physical shifts, you changed your diet, you started coming to the center. Great. And then more subtle renunciation was required. Internal attitude, drishti, vritti, cleaning that up. Right? Maybe renunciation of your opinions. Renunciation as you were asked to follow things. Renunciation of your ideas, especially if you're in a gathering and you want to strengthen a gathering. And then renunciation of the desire to be acknowledged and appreciated. Because if Baba belongs to you and Baba respects you and you belong to Baba, where's the desire to be acknowledged and appreciated come from? So this foundation of deeply having surrendered to Baba. Baba's my parent. Baba will not ask me to do anything that is not in my benefit. And I have surrendered to Baba, not to a human being. And so that quality of surrender allows for renunciation later on in life. And I think what tends to happen in a mind that hasn't become subtle, and especially thinking, is you start thinking about things you still have. You haven't released ownership. And that's when subtle ego creeps in. Ego of our thoughts, our ideas. And we inevitably become obstacles in very subtle ways to things moving forward. Because somehow we need to stand out. You know, becoming avyakt literally means to disappear and reappear. It's disappearing and reappearing. Because your every beginning point for action is a pure feeling. A stability in a pure feeling. So I'm taking a bit of time for this because when in your sakar lives, the soul has practiced virtue over a long period of time, I have conscientiously remained honest with myself by keeping a chart. I have conscientiously remain truthful in my relationships. I have made efforts to become humble, to become loving, to become patient. When I've accumulated virtue and I've consciously practiced virtue, then very naturally the soul is released from the bondage and the tension of the bondage of karma. Because one of the things we experience and why our mind goes into overdrive is because there's some karmic bondage there. And a karmic bondage is only created because we've performed action on the basis of vice. And in Sangam Yuga, the amazing thing is that there will always be an opportunity to be in that same situation again, but this time with a virtue. And so every situation or circumstance that comes to us in Sangam Yuga is there to be for us to practice a virtue, to donate a virtue, and donate a vice at the same time. And so when over a long period of time, the soul has paid attention to virtue, then becoming avyakt is like a... Right? Because there's no crisis of integrity inside. you're not taking gyan on one side and then being gopi on the other side. Does that make sense? Because you then inevitably create a split. You know a lot, but then you still continue with familiarity, old language, old ways of behaving, gossip, talking about others, critical, whatever nature and old sanskars are left. We kind of just, you know, go, oh, well, I've had the good murli, I've had, now let me just blah, be myself again. Yeah. And so you end up creating a sense of unease inside, because you're one thing one time, another thing another time. Morning yogis, and then the rest of the day it's spent indulging in the senses. Let's go have an ice cream. Right? So yeah, no, the destination is high, hey? Daddy Gulzar told us a story one time of this woman, the sister, who, she was a mother, she'd been in the yagya for many, many years. And then she developed a very severe illness and of course had to be taken to hospital. And when she got into hospital, of course the relatives step in because it's also a legal requirement, the relatives need to know. And quite a few of her relatives are non-BKs. But when she arrived into the hospital, and probably the day before she passed away, her condition deteriorated. She had actually started eating the food prepared by her relatives. And on one occasion, how it happened and started was because she had a desire for a particular kind of food. And it's called golgappe in Hindi. You know these little puris that they stuff and then you pop it into your mouth? And so that was her desire. And her relatives said to her, what's your last desire before you leave the body? She said, I want to eat this. So of course they went home and prepared it. And after so many years of having been with Baba and eaten pure food, her last meal was a meal of her desire, but being prepared by souls who don't practice purity. And so we think of our desires as small things. I had a desire for ice cream yesterday. And this is a weakness, I must confess. You know. And I had the thought as I was eating ice cream yesterday, what if these were my final few moments? What would be my destination? Right? And I thought, well, if I develop the habit that every time I feel like having an ice cream, I eat it, then at the end, what's going to rule me? Ice cream. And then it doesn't matter where it comes from, as long as my desire is fulfilled, right? That's the nature of desire. It brings you down from your purity. Any small desire. Because it's the small things at the end that will become obstacles for us. So, why I wanted to start from the place of belonging, because, you know, to do service from your avyakta stage, it's from a feeling of being deeply combined. You're not alone. Baba is one strength, one support. And Baba's there. Baba's doing his work. And I'm Baba's helper, watching where what is needed, listening, being available. And that's such a lovely place to be. Because when you take that position of being a godly helper, an instrument, a godly child, then your feelings will never change. You can relate to everybody equally. But when you're not stable in the feeling of being combined, then you will be influenced by the people you meet and very subtly impressed. And then in that being impressed, yes, you create a good friendship, this, but something very subtle gets lost. And so always inside, cultivating this feeling, I am combined. You know, we think a lot, we speak a lot, we churn perhaps a little bit less, but the third stage of being lost in what we are churning is very weak. That's why you can't sustain your avyakta stage. So, you know, this morning, even in the Murali, when Baba said, I am the ocean of peace, can I just contemplate and churn that and bring myself to the place of being merged in the ocean of peace? So what happens is when the experience of being lost in qualities is less, and your thinking and speaking is more, then souls will be impressed by what you say, and they'll say that the knowledge is very good, they'll come into connection with you, but because you're not lost in the experience of it, souls who come to you, they can't be lost, they won't have the courage to surrender to the experience and forge their relationship with Baba. So they'll come into connection, but they won't come into relationship. Because when a soul has the courage to surrender and have an experience, and not just play with words and be pleased by the thoughts they're having. Oh, this is interesting, this is interesting, this is interesting. Yeah, we know that's interesting, but are you experiencing the taste of it? Because that's what forging the relationship is, right? You're actually experiencing Baba's versions, and you're experiencing a piece of Baba. Every time you churn knowledge, you're taking into your mind a piece of Baba's intention, Baba's bhavana. And when you give yourself the space to experience what Baba has said, you cannot not be combined with Baba. And then any soul that comes in front of you, they will surrender to that experience. And that's the difference between creating subjects and heirs. An heir quality soul will always forge, have the courage to forge their relationship directly through an experience. Whereas a subject will be impressed. Listen to words, they'll take some knowledge, filter off, but they'll be happy with a little. So when I look at the daddies and Baba, that's all they did. They gave us drishti. And because they were lost in the love of one, in that moment, we became lost in the love of one. And so to be able to cultivate my avyakta stage, I have to spend more time becoming lost. And lost, not just in love of Baba, in seven different areas, we need a taste. One is becoming lost in the experience of my original form. My being lost in the experience of the eternal form is one thing. It's deep silence. Stillness. But my original form, when I first came down here, the sweetness of that, I need to spend then becoming lost in my original religion of peace. Then becoming lost in the experience of my original home. And then experiencing pure actions. You know, pure actions, their residue is satisfaction and contentment. An impure action will always leave you with a gap. You'll feel you've done something good, but dot, dot, dot. But pure actions, they leave behind the fragrance of satisfaction and contentment. And then also becoming lost in your aim. What's my aim? And the qualities of that aim. So one thing is to say, yes, Papa, I feel Lakshmi Narayan being Vishnu is my aim, but how many of the qualifications have I actually adopted for this aim? And so feeling that, feeling the accumulated qualifications. And then lastly, I think, one of the most important things for me is becoming lost in spinning the discus of self-realization. You need to enjoy swadarshan, seeing the self. Because I think our thoughts become gross when we start to see others, which is pardarshan. And then parchintan, to think about others. And so to really love swadarshan, where I'm able to see myself in a trikaldarshi aspect at any given moment in time. Now when you spend time experiencing each of these, so where is your time to have waste thoughts? You know, when people say to me, oh, what do I do to remove waste? And for me, it's an indicator that the taste in some of these areas is low. Right? And so, becoming lost. And when you actually become lost in the experience of jnana, the side effect of that is that your senses start to become cool. You become a god and goddess of coolness. And when people come into your company, it's like, oh, coming out of a hot sunny day under the shade of a cool tree. Just being massaged with spiritual vibrations. Because you are lost in that experience. I remember Baba also telling us in one Murli to give up 7 things. And of course, 5 of those 7 things we already know. Right? What are the 5 of the 7 things? So, name them. Lust, anger, attachment, greed, and arrogance. Yeah. And then the other 2, yes, that's the 6th, laziness. Well, no, he said something interesting for the 7th one. Fear. Fear is a vice. Hmm. I was quite intrigued when Baba said that, because Shaktis are fearless. And so giving up fear is important, you know, as part of the process. I think we play with our fears a lot, or we confine our lives to certain fears. And then we never grow. The fear of being told what to do, the fear of conforming, the fear of authority, the fear of hierarchy, somebody being above me, the fear of being stepped on. So many fears we have. And so we adjust our lives, our Brahmin lives, on the basis of those fears. And they don't allow us to stay lost in the experience of Baba, because we haven't given up the fear. And to give up fear, you need courage. You need courage. You have to step out. You have to say, that's not the energy that's driving me anymore. Now, one of the other things that I felt was important was the subject of time. Because I remember very clearly this Murali that Baba had spoken, when Baba had said, when you conquer time, you conquer death. When you conquer time, you conquer death. And why I think Baba was saying this is because one of the reasons why we can't experience being lost in love, lost in intoxication, lost in our spiritual rites, very simply because we waste time. Check your day. To what extent was your time being used in a worthwhile way? And when there's a wastage of time, then it just, wastage has an effect. It creates a burden in the soul. It just doesn't allow the soul to elevate. It doesn't allow the experience of elevation. So if we are able to check our wastage, then it's possible to become very powerful. Because even one drop of knowledge, you know, has the power to sustain so much. The experience of just being lost in love of one. And so I think time plays a very important role in this. The time of the confluence. The time of what I'm receiving. That I have an opportunity in each moment to partner with Baba. And to experiment with Baba. Yes, my circumstances at the end of the cycle are the direct product of my own karma. So I cannot wish to be somewhere else. They are a direct product of my karma. But the beautiful thing is, I have Baba now. And so can I sit in the soup of whatever circumstances I have with Baba, with my pure feelings, and begin finding, start to experiment and watch magic, the magic of transformation happen. That's how your karmic bondages become the food for service. Does that make sense? That's why when you are with Baba, you must never say, I have a karmic bondage. How can you say you have a karmic bondage when you have God? the soup is there, it's going to be there. But the feeling you have inside of fortune, of who you belong to. And just that feeling starts to transform the energy of the situation and circumstance you're in. You bring in benevolence. You bring in an attitude of serving. You bring in a feeling of wanting to uplift. You know, I remember when my father had cancer and Daddy came to meet him. And my mother was telling Daddy, oh, this is a karmic account. And Daddy went, shh, don't say that. This is not. This is an opportunity for him to reveal his yoga and his surrender to Baba. And it's a chance for service. And so someone who's very close and combined with Baba doesn't operate logically. They operate benevolently. Yeah? Logic and rationale is A plus B is C. This is possible, this is not possible. Pros and cons are weighed up. But benevolently means come in, do what needs to be done, come out again. Come in, give what needs to be given, come out again. Come in, give what needs. And that's what being combined with Baba does. It awakens the angel inside. The benevolent angel inside. What are the signs of someone who's stable in their avyakta stage? Mm-hmm. Silence. Happiness. Joy and happiness is one. What else? Someone who's stable in their avyakta stage. Very friendly to everyone. Like Daddy Janki. Do you think she's very friendly to everyone? Or is she such close friends with God that you feel like you're her friend? Yeah. Yeah. Good wishes for everyone. Baba has talked about two signs. One is that every act of theirs will appear unique. There's like this uniqueness that's visible in what they do. It's not ordinary. It's not familiar, it's not ordinary, but it's unique. Quietly unique. Something special in how they go about doing what they do. And the second is that they themselves will experience supersensuous joy in their activity. Action will not drain them. But there will be this experience of deep godly happiness, no matter what they do. These are the signs of someone who's stable in their avyakta stage. You know, in your avyakta stage, you can have a heart-to-heart chit-chat with Baba. Hmm? Very sweet, love-filled chit-chat. Like, you know, in the Murali, when the Murali of the 31st, when Baba plays with us, that's avyakt milan. That's the energy of an avyakt meeting. It's so sweetly playful with different qualities. Encouraging, motivating, clarifying, revealing. And so it's a very sweet experience, the avyakt stage. But to be able to make the avyakt stage a permanent experience, because the marks we get and the reward we get is for consistency. To what extent have you been able to remain constant in something over a long period of time? And for that, the soul has to practice shedding the body, the bodiless stage, point, bodiless stage, over a period of time. Because in the avyakta stage, there are no corporeal feelings, there's no physical feelings. It's sweet feelings. When you met and you listened to Baba on the 31st, for a few moments, even if your body was sick, you experienced the sweetness. There wasn't mixed corporeal feelings in there, was there? There was the sweetness of the soul with Baba. And so for that, the practice needed to maintain that sweetness over a long period of time, bodiless, again and again. In between your actions, stop and shed. Stop and shed. Shed the body consciousness of your thoughts. Shed the body consciousness of your ideas. Shed the body consciousness of feeling who you're with physically in that moment. Shed the body consciousness of role. Shed the body consciousness of your desire. Again and again and again. Because it's very easy for us to be body conscious. You just keep repeating an action again and again and you'll be body conscious. This is really easy. Soul consciousness is the state, bodilessness is the practice. Soul consciousness is a form of soul consciousness. It's a practice. See, soul consciousness is a practice, and that practice has seed stage, bodiless stage, avyakt stage, full stop moments, right? Incorporeal stage. All these are like levels. If you can't, let's say, if you can't practice seed stage, you catch the next stage. If you can't practice incorporeal stage, just practice bodiless. Shed. Make your intellect bodiless. Just let go in that moment of something. If you can't practice that, practice the detached observer. Be with Baba and just observe. If you can't practice that, then practice listening to songs that make you feel good. Anything to keep your feelings pure. Because that's what the soul conscious state is. Is pure feelings. Right? So you're catching one of these stages in the day to be able to keep your feelings consistently pure and not to let them drop into disheartenment, body consciousness of disheartenment, unhappiness, confusion, worry. Because whatever experience you stay in for a long period of time, you will become. It forms a very concrete part of your identity. So even if you get upset, quickly correct yourself. Quick. Don't let yourself stay somewhere for a long period of time. Because it becomes a sanskara. Do you remember the drill of the five forms? Yeah, when Baba started introducing us varieties of drills in the Avyakta Muralis. All of these drills are designed to enable the soul to emerge pure feelings. And so even when you practice the drill 5-6 times a day, it's easier to remain in your pure feelings. Just 1 second, go home. Then come down. Into your new body, a new world, new costume. And then fast forward to when pure bhakti began and your worthy of worship form. Very benevolent form. Merciful form. And then your Brahmin form. Pure, clean, transparent life. And then your angelic form. Immediately your mind feels light. Yeah? Immediately. This is an avyakt mind. It operates of pure feelings. And sometimes our efforts are as simple as keeping our feelings clean and pure. That's it. Baba's given us many methods for that. And whatever method works for us at any moment in time, we have to adopt that method. But this is the effort. It's very simple. And of course, on a last note, the whole purpose of our life in Sangam Yoga is, of course, one, to enjoy God's company. But enjoy God's company with what aim? What is God's company making us? What is God's company in truth making us? Sorry? Deities. And what are deities? Sorry? Lakshmi. What are they symbolic for? Purity and self-sovereignty. That's the end game. God has come to extract you from all your dependencies to make you into a self-sovereign. Independent, no subservience. That's why the three relationships of father, teacher and guru are so important. The father's love makes us feel combined. The teacher's directions create a track so that we don't fall into our belief systems. But as we follow the track of Srimad, we extract ourselves away from our old habits. Right? We understand. And as we follow the Satguru, we experience freedom from the bondage of our actions. And we experience blessings. And that whole process of engaging in these three relationships restores the soul back to its seat again. You know, there's this, when the hippie movement began, peace, brother, freedom. But what was the understanding of freedom? It was a resistance to the current system. It wasn't a real understanding of truth as a basis of freedom. And so people who then go on freedom marches eventually become victims of the same system, but just in a different way. There's not real freedom, and it happens in Gyan also. When souls have a reaction or they haven't given up fear, so they have a fear of authority, they have a fear of this, a fear of that. So, no, I have my own relationship with Shiv Baba, I can read the Murali at home, I don't need to come to the center. You understand what I'm saying here? It's very subtle. Because when you come close to God, you come close to each other. There's a very deep connection there. And as we start this process of transformation, which is what Sangam Yuga is about, it's not just about sitting there and lovey-dovey with God. The proof of love is self-sovereignty. And in this process of transforming ourselves to become transparent, see, the avyakta stage is the transparency of our purity. The full transparency of our purity. So as we follow directions to reform and transform ourselves to become transparent, there are four things we need to check so that, you know, you're on track. Firstly, to what extent is there a stage of being elevated in all aspects? So elevated in my thinking, elevated in the way I speak, elevated, royal in the way I interact, elevated in my lifestyle. What I eat, how I eat it. So I have to check elevation levels practically in areas of my life. Remember, we are reclaiming our kingship. Yeah, kings don't eat in ordinary ways and anything that comes on their plate. Everything they eat is checked. So, to what extent is there a stage of being elevated in all aspects of my life? That's a very important audit to do. Second check. How close have I come to my complete stage? And how much closeness is there in my relationship with others? How close have I come to my complete stage? And how much closeness is there in my relationship with others? You know, when you look at the deities in the Golden Age interacting with each other, there's a natural closeness, right? Without being physically close, without being in each other's space. But it's the closeness of purity. When two souls who have such pure feelings connect, there's just a natural closeness there, without words. So this is a very important checking point. Because in our current climate in the Brahmin family, as the family grows bigger, the variety, the differences of sanskars are being played out. And what gets lost in the process, as I start looking at what somebody should do, shouldn't do, is I lose sight of my aim, the closeness to my complete stage. And then as a result, because I lost sight of my aim, I start to become distant from you. No? Otherwise, when I'm close to my aim, then I recognize, oh, this is that same deity soul. Your aim will bring recognition of another. Does that make sense? You know, there's a story that I remember Daddy had shared with us. And it was a time, Sakar Baba's times, and there was a sister in the kitchen that was creating a few problems. Of course, her sanskars in nature. And Didi came to Baba to say that this is what's happening. Excuse me. And what was interesting was that when Didi came to Baba, Baba said to Didi, "You're talking about her, but why is your face changing in the process?" So then, of course, that was Didi's first correction. And then Baba said to Didi, ask that sister to come and see me in the morning. So that sister came to see Baba in the morning. And she came into Baba's room and took drishti from Baba. And then Baba said to her, child, whatever bhakti you've done on the path of devotion, it's been false. And she was a little shocked. Why is Baba saying that to me? And Baba then went on to say, child, you were worshipping stone images on the path of devotion as deities. And now those very same deities are in front of you and you still haven't recognized them. You're finding fault in them. So what kind of bhakti did you do then? So when, for me that was a very powerful response from Baba, like a very far-sighted response. That the quality of our bhakti, if it's been superficial, without love, means that in Gyan, the quality of our relationships will be like that. So now, as I'm being asked to shed my bhakti sanskars of wanting to put someone up on a pedestal, wanting someone to be perfect, which is a bhakti sanskar. But it's very deep. This is a subtle form of dependence. And that's from that point of that bhakti sanskar, a lot begins. You know, this should be like this, this should be like that, that's not right, that's not right, that's not right. And what I lose in the process is my patience, my sweetness, my contentment, my tolerance. I lose my own divinity in pursuing someone else's divinity. So we're deeply being invited at this time to shed some very old bhakti sanskars and to come close to our complete stage. What am I becoming? What am I being invited to become? And then three, the third checking point, it's very important. To what extent is there contentment with the self and in your relationships with others? To what extent is there contentment with yourself and in your relationships with others? And the fourth, to what extent have you developed courage in yourself? To what extent have you developed courage in yourself? I personally find that these have been ongoing areas of checking for me. And I was able to kind of put them into essence because they're very important areas in this journey of becoming an angel, an avyakt. Because before we become a perfect deity, full transparency is needed. And to become fully transparent, I have to change something. And to change something, I have to check something. I'm going to stop there. Was that helpful? Do you have any questions?
Can you explain the difference on Baba and father's
Okay. bodiless mainly. How to experience the body. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we can get stuck in words here. We can get stuck in specifics. But I do want to make this comment that Baba makes me bodiless. I want you to... That's why I started from a place of when a child is born, before it can even say mum and dad, what does it feel? Love of mum and dad, right? It feels love. That umbilical cord of love with Papa is the basis of becoming soul conscious. It's the basis of, in any moment, just shedding the body and becoming the point. The incorporeal stage is the stage of going beyond sound. The home of silence. Deep silence. It's taking yourself home. That's the incorporeal stage. Whereas the bodiless stage is practiced here in the body. The practice of taking off your costume, putting it back on, taking it off, putting it back on, taking it off, putting it back on. It's traveling home. The experience of the home, Nirvana, going beyond sound. So, but all of these practices, bodiless, full stop, what's going to motivate you to be bodiless? What's going to motivate you to go home? What's going to motivate you to put a full stop to rubbish? It's love. It's Papa's love. And when I let myself be a child, then I can experience the Father. The Father's love. Because in the Father's love is all type of love. It has everything in it. Security, safety, attainment, fullness, everything. So what? You know, one time a sister came to Daddy and she was taking leave. She'd come to Madhuban and she came to Daddy to take leave. And she said to Daddy, "Daddy, my father passed away last year. And on this Madhuban trip, it was the first time I felt Baba to be my father." So Daddy just looked at her very sweetly. And Daddy said, "My sweet innocent one, but Baba is your unlimited father. Why are you trying to fit the experience of a small Lokik father into such a big... He has always been your father. He is your father. This Lokik father of one birth is a small experience. Nothing. So why are you trying to fit the unlimited into the limited? Look, Baba is the parent of the child." And then the relationship with teacher gets developed when I consider myself to be a student. You need an attitude of learning. There's a lot of gyan. You know, okay, the Sakar Murlis are 5-year cycles. Yeah, 5 years. And then they get repeated. So you need to have at least been a Brahmin for 5 years. And to have listened to the Murli every single day to get the basics. Let's just be black and white about this, right? And then forget about the Avyakt Murlis, right? The Avyakt Murlis since 1969. And next year it will be, what, 50 years? 50 years of Avyakt Murlis! Like, how much studying do we have to do? You know, and if you were to revise all the Murlis, my Lokik mother, she's a Brahmin, and I'm so impressed with her because, you know, she's revised all the Avyakt Murlis from 1969 to present day, 3 times. She loves her study. And when you have so much knowledge of God's perspective on every topic at your fingertips, then it's like having the teacher with you all the time. Because when things come, what you've been taught immediately gets activated. Not your opinions and your feelings and your ideas, but a very, very clear understanding and perspective. Right? That's what makes you a good instrument. Nothing of your stuff is mixed. And then the third thing is the Satguru. And what was interesting was somebody had asked Daddy Gulzar this question, but Daddy, you know, in the East, they have this practice of having gurus and whatever, but in the West, we don't. So how do you experience the Satguru? And Daddy gave a beautiful answer. She said, take the blessing from every day's Murali and experience it. Make it your own. You know, at the end of every Murali, there's a blessing. And she said, that you will start to feel that blessing work for you in the day. You will start to live the blessing. So, you know, having yoga with Baba is not a technical affair. It's a love affair. It's a love affair of truth. It's a love affair that's going to make us free. And it's a love affair that will never betray us. Baba can take on any form you want him to take on at any moment in time. If you consider yourself to be a child, you will command Baba with that right. Just Baba, like, you know, Daddy Janki calls out, Mera Baba. Right? Same, when you do that from here, Baba cannot not come. And that's the beauty of Baba, can be whatever you want him to be. But Baba has high standards, huh? Yeah. Very high standards. Yeah. It's not that he's going to come down to your level, but he's going to invite you to come up to his level. Yes, the yoga with Baba is a love affair. Okay. To get to that stage, you still have to follow some process. Okay, when you're having a love affair with a human being, what are you doing? Is there a process for that? Well, in the first instance, it's honeymoon. It just happens. It doesn't stay honeymoon all the time, does it? Then what is the process of truly sustaining love in a relationship? You have to get to know that person. You have to get to know that person. You have to understand their needs. And like Hansa was saying on the first, you have to sometimes swing with them. You know? It's the harmony dance. Harmony dance isn't an expectation. It's my ability to dance. Just to invite someone to dance. That's a movement. And so you, knowing is the basis of real love. If I'm in a relationship with somebody, and here I'm visualizing, I'm loving them, it's all going on in my head, but it's not in practice. So yoga is not a visualization process, it's not imagination. It is a deep experience of intention. Murali is the basis of love. If you can't listen to the Murali, how you're going to know the person who is loving you? And the process is very simple. Wake up for Amrit Vela and listen to Murali every day. That's simple. What else is there? When you are supported so beautifully first thing in the morning with such a loving words and relationship, throughout the day, that's what you remember. And that's what makes you bodiless. That's what makes you want to shed the attraction of the physical. That's what makes you want to keep becoming good. But when your relationship with Murali is superficial, or you're going through the motions because you have to and you're being told you have to, but you're not engaging with it, then you default back to your imagination. You know, many times when people practice soul consciousness, they're just watching a movie in their head. I'm a soul point of light traveling through the ceiling, going up above, beyond, to the land of stars and sun and moon, beyond there, into a region of white light, then beyond the white light, into red light. Oh, the light's really lovely and peaceful. And then crash land. Right? And you crash land back into the same circumstances, situation, but you don't have any education. You don't have tools. You don't have weapons of knowledge. So you can't change perspective. You can't detach. You can't observe. So when you use the faculty of imagination too much, you actually end up disassociating from life, rather than using the power to face. Because our game is here. And it's a switch of consciousness. And when we have enough gyan and understanding, we are self-realized beings on a battlefield. Does that make sense? Meditation is a preparation for Murali, and in the meditation, the practice has to be to put yourself in front of the person, of the one who's teaching me the knowledge, which is Baba, which is becoming the child in front of God. Really feeling the connection with Baba. I'm just a child and I'm about to be spoken to. This soul has come down onto this planet to introduce himself to me. My father has come back to me. That preparation. When you listen to the Murali with that awareness of the highest on high, then every word will go in. Because we have a tendency to give importance to the person who's speaking the words, not to the words themselves. Right? You'll all go listen to Daddy Janki. Right? But you'll think twice before coming to listen to me. I mean, I'm just saying, no, in the sense, I'm just using that as an example because, oh, that's how it works. So in your meditation, when you feel that this is the highest on high coming to speak to me, your experience of Murali is completely different. This is what elevation is. This is what celebrating an avyakt meeting is. And then you'll have that avyakt meeting every morning. Sakar Murali, yes, Sakar Murali is very important bread and butter brainwashing. Because there are many things, facts and figures people still don't know. So you need a full foundation of Sakar Murali's context. It sets the context. The Avyakt Murali's flavor is different. It's the revision course. So the Avyakt Murali's focus on dharana more. Reformation, the subtleties of transformation. And the Sakar Murali lays the context. It gives you a context for who you are. And once you have a context, then you can self-realize. But if you try and transform yourself without a context, it's struggle. You know what I mean? You don't know your history, you don't know where you're going, so what are you transforming? From what to what? So the Avyakt focuses on the subtleties of the transformation process.